All right, I believe I am live here. I am just testing something out. I am simultaneously going to be live on Instagram for all my Instagram friends. Let me just start this. Checking connection. All right, and now we're also live on Instagram. Okay, so this is just the finish. Let's invite some friends. Okay. Very good. We'll just let some people log on here, and then I'm going to get into some really cool stuff. I hope everybody's doing well. I had a few articles that I've been browsing, some ideas I've been considering, as I recently just launched a Japanese jiu-jitsu program here in Souk, where I live, and I've got it's grown fairly quickly in a short period of time. I'm very excited about that. I've been teaching at this gym for, my God, it's close to 2 years now. And originally I was doing some fitness classes, kickboxing, teaching kids programs. Wasn't really doing it in a very formal way. And then very recently I just started to put together a legit program. And I recently had the opportunity to travel to Ottawa to see some of my friends and family over there in the martial art world. And I'm re-inspired to be back teaching this particular program. So I'm going to get into some of the ideas that are behind it. And I also want to just hear from you. I mean, I've been recording some of these episodes for Truth Warrior. Sometimes I do it when I'm driving. I'm usually driving to training or driving somewhere. And then other times I have the time to come in my office and do a proper recording, or I pre-record something while I'm out walking in the woods or something like that. But I figured I'd do a live one and get some of your comments and feedback. And I hope everybody can hear me okay. If anybody's in the chat, I'm testing out this whole setup, so let me know how it sounds, and then I'll get into some stuff. I got some people on Instagram too. This is great. Welcome everybody. I hope you're well, wherever you live in the world, whatever you're doing. I'm excited to be here. So what I'm actually doing, for those that are interested in the technical side of things, is there are a lot of really good programs out there where you can simulcast on multiple platforms. One of them would be like JW Player, or there's a bunch of other ones, but I'm just doing it old school. I'm just doing a laptop for Facebook Live. I've got my phone hooked up for Instagram Live. I've got a lapel mic for my phone and my badass Yeti microphone for you guys here on Facebook. So that's how I'm doing this one. Okay, it says it sounds great. Thank you, Kimberly. How are you doing? Hope you're well. Steven, superb, excellent. All right. Arcaduz. How do I pronounce that, man? I guess you can't really type how to pronounce it, but you said sounds good. Thanks for joining in. Steven's here. Luis is here. Corey is here. Very nice. All right. So, guys, I talk a lot about martial arts. It's the basis behind my way of life. It's something I've done a long time in my life and had many benefits from. And I really feel it's an honor to be able to do shows like this to bring out what I feel are often overlooked elements within martial arts and how it can actually apply to your life, whether you train martial arts or not, although I do highly recommend that you get down to your local martial arts studio, get involved with your community, start training in a discipline that resonates with you. And before I get into the philosophical side of things, I'm going to answer the question that a lot of you have and a lot of people are emailing me about. It's very common. So they hear me talk about martial arts, they get excited, which is good. That means I'm doing my job well. And then they're like, well, where do I go? Where do I go train? How do I find a studio? What do I do? Like, I don't know which is the best martial art to train and all that. And so I'll just get that out of the way, because I know that question will come up. And my recommendation for you is to do some trials before you go into just anywhere. All right. So not all places are the same. Not all places are going to resonate with you the same way. You have to do your own research as to what's local to you. Is it realistic for you to go and train on a regular basis there? Like, is it close enough to you? Are you going to have problems with work and commuting or whatever? You got to take all those things in consideration, just making sure it's accessible to you. And then if you are hardcore and you know that the place you want to train is further away, are you willing to commit the time it takes to commute? Like, I commute to a place in Victoria. I train with Matt Kaiser, Kaiser Jiu-Jitsu. Word up, guys. I'll be seeing you later tonight in Victoria. And Victoria is about 45 minutes away from where I live. So I commute a few times a week because it's worth it for me, because there's a great group of people there, very talented martial artists, great program, great energy. I love Matt's philosophy of jiu-jitsu. He's excellent. So I sought out somebody that would be able to teach me what I want to learn, which I want to master the ground game. That's one of my goals this year, is to focus in on that. But for you out there, whether you're experienced or if you're coming into this for the first time, there are many different styles of martial arts that you can train. And when it comes to the technical side of things, there's tons of debate about what's the best martial arts? What's the best one? And I don't really like to look at it like that. I don't like looking at it like, well, Kung Fu is better than karate, or jiu-jitsu is better than taekwondo or whatever. I think all of the martial arts have something unique to offer. And hopefully, regardless of the martial arts style that you're training, your sensei or sifu or coach or whatever is going to also relay the very important life-changing aspects of martial art philosophy to you when they're training you. And I'm a number one advocate for that. If you're someone that actually is out there that does teach martial arts, as easy as it is to just get caught up in giving the public what you think they want, which is let's just get in shape and let's just show you how to kick someone's ass in less than 30 seconds. And, you know, we sort of push the competitive side of it. Those are all fine and good. But one of the cornerstones of everything that you're doing is you're trying to change people's lives, and you're trying to change it for the better. And you're trying to inspire people to come out of their own inner to defeat their inner trepidation, to defeat their own anxiety, to overcome things like depression, to find a way to learn about yourself so that you can overcome the obstacles that are inevitably going to hit you at some point in life, right? That's really what martial arts is to me. It's more than just learning the dynamics of technical proficiency in martial arts. That's the fun side of it. That's the scientific side of it. That is, you want to make sure that what you're training is practical. Right? That's obviously very important. Even if it's not martial arts, maybe you're in a different study or a different discipline. You want it to work. You want to be proficient at it. And that proficiency and that competency and learning how to be competent under pressure and going up against adversity is really one of the most important aspects of martial arts. And so it's important that you, if you're a coach in this field, that you relay that side of it to your students and give them practical steps of not just how to overcome an opponent on the mats, but how to overcome yourself, how to overcome your own limiting belief systems, how to overcome challenges that you're facing in your life, how to overcome the things that we've all had in our past, maybe growing up, some of the traumas that happened to us or things that put us on a wrong track in life. I feel like martial arts is a really simple system that can give you a practical experimental lab where you can go in and you can learn about your strengths, your weaknesses. It helps you deal with your emotional, the things that hold you back emotionally. It helps you deal with physical challenges. Like, I have students that, you know, they've got bad knees or they've had previous injuries. I've told the story before. I've even had a gentleman come in who was missing a leg and he wanted to train martial arts. And I was like, I am totally here to help you in any way I can, and we will find a way to do it. There are people that are restricted to wheelchairs that train martial arts. There are people with mental disabilities that train martial arts. Martial arts is something that anybody can do. And the unique thing about it, and the reason why I talk about it all the time and I'm such an advocate for it, is that it is a very unique spiritual discipline. It's a unique spiritual discipline. There are many spiritual disciplines. There are many art forms that you can study. There are many ways you can learn how to express your body and your mind, and access your creativity. But the unique aspect of martial arts specifically, and the whole warrior philosophy that I've sort of used as my banner when I come to the public like this and put a show together like this, is that you're trying to learn how to overcome the greatest enemy you're ever going to face which is your own mind and your own, the limiting parts of you that are holding you back from greatness, that are holding you back from accessing your full potential. And we hear these buzzwords, guys, and I mean, language is restrictive, and you know, you hear this a lot, even like the New Age community or in pop culture, and you see a lot of books on personal development and all this kind of stuff, and it starts to get kind of redundant. And I think people, without, when you just hear ideas all the time and you're just listening and you're just sitting back passively and you're watching someone talk to you about an idea, that's nowhere near as powerful as when you actually get to put that idea in practice. So that's one thing I like about martial arts, is like you can come into a training facility and you can be shown right away something that is going to prove to you that you're capable of doing something you otherwise maybe thought you weren't, you know? So you're already in the process of sort of proving yourself wrong. And you're going to prove yourself wrong more often in martial arts than you're going to prove yourself right. So it's a very humbling experience. Hey, Valicia, how you doing? Oh my God, it's been forever. She just joined in. I noticed. Oh, and Chris Neves is here. What's up, man? Mr. Bob Tuscan. We got Claire here. I got some great people here. Mike Bidwell. Anyways, I'm saying that it is a way of approaching life where you're challenging yourself all the time. And if you think about the world right now with all this technological access that we have, where things are getting easier and easier and easier, and products are coming out, and all these things are coming out to make your life easier, quote unquote. My question to you is, why in the time when it should be considered the greatest time to be alive, with all the challenges, and there are many, okay? But I mean, go back in history and show me a page of history that isn't fraught with some kind of challenge. Obviously, here we are, 2018, we have many challenges politically, socially, environmentally, and on we go. But there's also a spiritual crisis in people where we've lost our inner strength. We've lost our inner fortitude. We've lost our ability to think critically, to actually go through the process of argumentation, like rational argumentation, where you're having a discussion in order to enlighten yourself, not just to be the one that wins, not just to be the one that's right, not just to be the one that gets this rousing approval from the crowd, but that you're actually on an honest quest to find out what is a better way of living. It was like what Krishnamurti said so beautifully when he was talking about what this is it's an examination of finding out, putting every fiber of your being towards finding out a way of living differently. And why would you want to live differently than you are now? Well, because a lot of people, maybe not you, but a lot of people out there are very unhappy with their lives. So with all the technology and all the things at our disposal and this easy lifestyle where everything's downloadable and fast food and quick access, people are not happy. And I want to share an article with you. And feel free, guys, at any time to comment, say hi, to ask questions or whatever, just to put some comments in there. I'd love to hear what you got to say. Oh, hey, let's check on Instagram quickly. We got Ann Foster. Hey, what's up, Ann? How you doing? Marianne says, hi, David. Hey, Marianne, how you doing? Cool, this is great. Okay, so let's go on to this. There's a massive study. This is reported by intellectualtakeout.org. I love a lot of their stuff. This is a study that says, massive study finds a link between high screen time and unhappiness. And they're talking about teens, okay? So you can kind of see where I'm going to go with this, where if your life is in a state of imbalance and you're not getting the basic requirements that all human beings need, which is a balance of a lot of different things, when you're out of balance, your system starts to crash. And when you relate that to martial arts, it's just, you can prove that to yourself when you're in, say, a grappling scenario or a striking scenario, or you're trying to escape a particular hold, or you're working on a specific combination, you're trying to master it, and you're constantly fighting with your mind and your body, and it's very disconnected. And you're actually going to prove to yourself by walking into a martial arts studio just how disconnected your mind and body probably are right now. And the idea is to try to look at harmonizing that. That's why in a lot of martial arts schools, you're going to see mind, body, spirit, you know, integrating them all together, because human beings have many different dimensions to them. And if any of those areas become unbalanced, obviously that leads to the opposite of happiness, which is the goal. So this article, I'll just read a little synopsis from it here. They say, we'd all like to be a little happier. The problem is that much of what determines happiness is outside of our control. Some of us are genetically predisposed to see the world through rose-colored glasses. I don't know what genetically. While others have a generally negative outlook on life. Bad things happen to us and in the world. People can be unkind. Jobs can be tedious. We could list 100 different things as to what contributes to people being unhappy. But then it says, but we do have some control over how we spend our leisure time. That's one of the reasons why it's worth asking which leisure time activities are linked to happiness and which aren't. And in a new analysis of 1 million U.S. teens, the author of the article is saying, my co-authors and I looked at how teens were spending their time and which activities correlated with happiness and which didn't. We wanted to see if it changes in the way teens spend their free time, that it might partially explain a startling drop in teens' happiness after the year 2012, and perhaps a decline in adults' happiness since around 2000 as well. So a possible culprit emerges, they say. In our study, we analyzed data from a nationally represented survey of 8th, 10th, and 12th graders that's been conducted annually since about 91. Every year, teens are asked about their general state of happiness, in addition to how they spend their time. We found that teens who spend more time seeing their friends in person, exercising, playing sports, attending religious services, reading, or even doing homework together were happier. However, teens that spent more time on the internet, playing computer games, on social media, texting, using video chat, or watching TV, ended up being less happy. In other words, every activity that didn't involve a screen was linked to more happiness, and every activity that involved a screen was linked to less happiness. And the differences were quite considerable. Teens who spent more than 5 hours a day online were twice as likely to be unhappy as those who spent less than an hour a day. So they go on to this and they talk about it's not just teens. There's some other studies in there. Let me just fire this link into the chat so you guys have it. So let me just boom. Hey, is that who said that? I got a bunch of people that just started commenting. Hold on. Hey, my brother's online. Brother, what's up, man? How you doing? Good to see you. Quickly just go through this. Ben Stewart, can't watch until I'm off work, but do you mention a name that I cannot pronounce? Love your work, David. Keep it up and let's catch up soon. Cool. Yeah. Let's talk about that sometime. I have no idea what that is. So, all right, cool. Yeah. Brandon Young, it's adults too. Exactly. So read the study and then let me know your thoughts. But let me just say right off the bat, first of all, we're all doing some screen time right now. If you're watching me, we're all on the internet. We're all on social media. We're all engaged in screen time, right? Again, life is about balance. And by and large, do you think a lot of young people are online using the better parts of the internet? Do you think that's the majority of what they're doing? Or, you know, what kind of websites? That's another thing where you could get very detailed into, okay, it's not just that they're online, but what are they doing online? Are they just playing games where they're shooting each other? Are they engaged in intellectual discussions? Are they studying philosophy? Are they discussing religion? Are they discussing things that matter to them on a deep level? Are they trying to learn? Like, are they using the internet as a resource to learn? Or is it just a playground? And I think that everything has to be done in balance, because if we engage too much in the digital artificial reality world, which is where our world is flying to at a very blinding speed, then it's very natural that we're going to get disconnected from what makes us human and what the needs that we have as human beings to have an individual, personal, private life, to have a family life, to have friends that are like true friends, like not just people that you know and you wave to once in a while, but true friends that are there for you, that got your back, that you enjoy spending time with, that stimulate you intellectually, that you can talk about some of your deepest, darkest fears with, et cetera, or whatever your challenges are in life. You know, you got a shoulder to cry on, you got a whole, you have a support system, really. And then you have a community. Hope, you know, this is another thing that's being lost, is this sense of community. And so, yeah, I guess there's, in a way, when you go online, you can find those communities that you want to be a part of that are like-minded. You can find them a little bit easier than having to go shop around your local town or city that you live in. But it's all about, how is your time being spent and what do you really hope to get out of it? So I guess it kind of brings us to the whole thing about, you know, the whole instant gratification versus delayed gratification thing. This is obviously also linked it to your state of happiness. Because if you're only doing things that are instantly gratifying and you don't have to work for it, and you don't have to strive for it, and you don't have to expand your boundaries, and you don't have to challenge yourself, I believe that will ultimately lead to a state of depression and a state of feeling like you're not worthy, like you're not happy. And then what happens is you become addicted to looking for quick, instant gratifications everywhere you possibly can. And trust me, our society today has them ready for you, ready to go, and are advertising them to you constantly. And so we start to get this feeling like, well, that's what I need in order to be happy, because that's what all the celebrities are doing. That's what is being put in my face. And even if you disagree with it on the surface, subconsciously, you are completely susceptible to being literally programmed to think a certain way. Hey, Bob. Bob says, I brainwash my kid with a screen daily. Well, hopefully you're making them watch some good stuff. I have two girls, guys, and yeah, they've got some screen time. They're into the iPad. They mostly play games where they're just dressing up dolls, or, you know, my daughter Avery, she loves Minecraft, you know, building stuff, and, you know, it's got nice calming music, and, you know, but I really try to restrict it to a degree, because I also live in a beautiful place where there's tons of nature. There's hiking, there's kayaking, there's camping, there's parks everywhere. There's kids running around everywhere. I live in an amazing place, which is why I came up here. And I did that because I started to feel like, you know, I was living in a big city. I was living in Toronto, and I love Toronto. I had a great time there. A lot of awesome friends that I have there, and family and whatnot. But I felt like the city was just restricting the access that I had to, or let's put it this way. The city just wasn't vibing with me anymore. And I felt like, if I want to raise my daughters in a healthy environment, I wanted more of a smaller town. I wanted something where there was a lot of access to outdoor activities, because I see the kind of time that we live in, and I see the age that we're in, and I see where things are going. And I don't want my daughters to grow up not feeling whole and complete. I mean, like any parent would. And that's not to knock people that live in big cities. That works for people. That worked for me for a while. Who knows? Maybe I'll change my mind later down the road. But right now, I'm trying to introduce my girls to the real world as much as I possibly can and get them used to that. And, you know, it's another thing that's really important for parents, you know, is roughhousing with your kids. This is something that sounds simple, and this relates to the martial art thing, but it's natural that young kids want to scrap it out with you in a fun, playful way. So play fighting. I mean, I grew up with my brother, and I think he's still tuned in here, hopefully, but we used to beat the crap out of each other just for fun. I mean, it was just part of it. We'd wrestle, we'd play, and my dad would always wrestle with us. I do it with my kids all the time, and they're always game. Like, my daughter could be right in the middle of building some house in Minecraft, and if I walk up and start poking at her and pushing her around and kind of playing with her a bit, she's automatically like throwing the controller down and coming after me. And I want to keep that going as long as possible, because the last thing you want is your kids to just be like little zombies, completely tuned out and just addicted to being online all the time. So having your children engage in the real world as much as possible, no, you don't have to put a straitjacket on them, in my opinion. No, you don't have to be like, there's no internet connection, there's no television, there's no phones, there's no nothing. Like, okay, if you want to go live in an Amish community, maybe that's going to work for you. But we do live in this time. Your children do need to understand how technology works. Technology is a double-edged sword. And what I do with my kids is I try to show them how to use this stuff in a way that's going to actually educate them. You know, how to go, if you have a question, like my daughter had a question about, what was it she wanted to learn about? Oh, she wanted to learn about tornadoes. Okay. She calls them tornadoes. She wanted to learn about tornadoes. And so I'm like, hey, let's go look this up together. So I pretended like I didn't know anything about tornadoes. And her and I went on a journey of going online and looking at video footage. And she was a little freaked out. So I had to explain it, you know. And then she got fascinated with it. And then now when she goes to the library, she's looking up tornado books and she's talking about it because she's naturally interested. So I was trying to show her there's resources out there that you can use to go and research this for yourself. So if you can teach your children one thing, teach them how to learn. Keep that curiosity alive. For goodness sake, that curiosity is very linked to your psychological health and your spiritual well-being. And if we lose curiosity by always pursuing instant gratification, everything comes really, really easy. There's no need to be curious anymore. It's like when you're playing a game where there's no consequences to any of your actions at all. And if there's no consequences, the game gets really boring, doesn't it? If there's no adversity, it's boring. Like, when was the last time you watched a movie where there wasn't an antagonist of some kind, where there wasn't a challenge that people had to overcome, or where there wasn't, like, we even like watching movies about tragedy because it brings out something to us. It connects something with us because obviously our history is fraught with tragedy. Everything we have today, all the technology, Western civilization in general, or any civilization, it came to be through tragedy, through trial and error, through facing adversity, through overcoming obstacles, through being a warrior in that sense. You know, that's what it took. And if we eradicate that by having things too easy all the time, then we're eradicating a very special and unique quality that belongs to the human species. And that concerns me. And that's kind of what this study was getting into a little bit. And it's linking to happiness. So let's talk a little bit more about happiness for a second. Brandon Young says, wisdom through suffering. Couldn't agree more. James says, article on exactly what you're talking about, 25-year study. Oh, good. Nice. I will check that out, bro. Thanks for contributing on that. Okay, so let me go over here. I have something. Okay, so Eudaimonia, this is a Greek philosophical term for happiness. So it is a Greek word commonly translated as happiness or as welfare. However, human flourishing has been proposed as a more accurate translation. Etymologically, it consists of the words eu or eu, which is good, and demore, which is spirit. It is a central concept in Aristotelian ethics and political philosophy, along with the terms Already, sorry, my pronunciation is horrible. I don't speak Greek. Most often translated as virtue or excellence. Okay. And the discussion on the links between virtue of character and happiness is one of the central concerns of ancient ethics and a subject of much disagreement. As a result, there have been many varieties of eudaimonism. Two of the most influential forms are those of Aristotle and the Stoics. So Aristotle takes virtue and its exercise to be the most important constituent in eudaimonia, but acknowledges also the importance of external goods such as health, wealth, and beauty. By contrast, the Stoics make virtue necessary and sufficient for eudaimonia and thus deny the necessity of external goods. So let's break that down. So basically, there's the old concept of happiness for Aristotle was both. It was you are both. You're trying to become happy through an internal process of you know, thinking philosophically, connecting to nature, having some kind of connection to your culture and your religion and all of that. And then also you can gain certain levels of happiness by being healthy and successful in your life. Obviously, I mean, well, health is a no-brainer, but successful. This is something that's really hard for people a lot of times where they feel like, well, anybody that's out there trying to pursue personal success is just some selfish asshole that doesn't care about anybody and is only focused on making money and all this kind of stuff. And obviously those people exist, but that's not what's being discussed in that idea. And I think that's where you look at the Stoic concept as, you know, virtue is necessary, obviously. You have to be virtuous in life, and they go through the virtues. I've done that before in other shows. But virtue alone is sufficient for happiness. And they almost look at external goods as something that will bring you off of that path towards finding happiness. And hey, they've got a great argument there in many respects. I'm kind of a person that I try to take a balanced approach to life. See, your ability, or so let's put it this way, having the knowledge that you are capable of living effectively. So you're capable of survival. That's your basic need that needs to be obviously taken care of. You're capable of being competent in the areas that you're pursuing. And there's a reason why, I believe there's a reason why you have certain interests and goals and passions that you want to pursue that we often put off, don't we? We often put those on the back burner and say, well, no, I've got to go and, you know, focus on just earning a living just to get by. So that idea of survival usually takes over our path towards happiness because that consumes so much of our time. So then the question is, well, how do you escape that? How do you find a way to have both? How do you find a way to maybe earn a living doing what you love? This is the dream, isn't it? The dream is to not just work some job you hate so you can pay your bills, but that you can actually become successful and competent in an area that interests you. And if it interests you, you're going to be more successful at that than something that doesn't interest you, right? How could you then have your survival linked with your passion? So basically, how could you go from just having some occupation, some job, to having a vocation where you're, this is something that's intimately linked to you? So for me, that was martial arts and philosophy. I love philosophy. I love deep thinking. I like questioning things. And I love martial arts. I've related them together. I believe they're on the same track. I guess that you could say that's my personal religion in a way, as scary as that word might be for some people. But it's a way of life. That's how I look at it. And it's important to have that. And it's important to recognize that you are worthy of happiness, that you are worthy of success, that you have, you will have to gain the skills necessary to live that kind of life. It does require that you come outside of your box. It does require that you face your fears. It does require that you realize that you're going to face a lot of adversity on that road. But if you can stop thinking about it as adversity, and challenge and all these things that you have to deal with, and think of it as part of the happiness journey, your life will change. Your life will change because you'll realize that the challenge is the entertainment factor. That's what you want. Think about it. In our movies that we watch, in the shows that we watch, we like to watch the protagonists and the heroes of those stories overcoming challenge. So even when we're taking a break from life and just trying to zone out and watch some movie or some show, we prefer to see somebody that's engaging in overcoming some sort of adversity. So that means that there's something linked there to us deeply. It probably goes back genetically and historically, but even psychologically, think about it. Our agricultural ancestors had to go through tremendous adversity just to produce bread and food and, you know, all these different things that we have now that we sort of take for granted. It was a tremendous challenge. Before electricity, holy crap, what kind of life would it have been? But that didn't mean nobody was happy. I think we look at the, you know, people from ancient times as they must have just been constantly worried about dying and constantly under siege by some disease or constantly in some dark corner somewhere. Yet what's interesting is you get some of the most beautiful things that have ever been written from the ancient world, from all over the ancient world, like not just one place, but like all cultures have written down some beautiful things about life. And that beauty comes from struggle. The best artists, the best musicians, the best filmmakers, the best inventors, and even the best industrialists that built something that was good for society, they came out of adversity. So to rob ourselves and our culture and our society from adversity by trying to nerf the world, by trying to overly protect your children to the point of insanity, to overly police everything, and this is why politically, that's why we have this big brother sort of state apparatus, right? Is because it comes from the fact that people support it through fear. It's fear-based. And if you're living through fear, you're going to realize your fears. But if you're living through courage, and I mean, courage is not the absence of fear. Courage is a recognition of fear. Courage is a, let's team up with fear and let's use fear in the other direction. Let's use fear in its proper context, in its sane and rational context where it serves a purpose. Let's not try to negate it and drug it out of existence. Because by cutting that part off, that's the adversary, by cutting that off, you might feel like you're floating around in blissful la-la land, drugged out of your mind all the time, because you're just trying to block out the fear or the inner adversary or whatever you want to call it. But by doing that, you're stripping yourself of the happiness, because that's a very important part of success. The important part of success is failure. Not failure overall, because I believe you only fail if you quit when you hit adversity. That's a failure. That's somebody I would call a loser. I would use that term, be like, and I've called myself a loser in the past because I've done that too. So I'm not trying to be up on a high horse here. I'm just saying that if you hit adversity and you quit, you will never forgive yourself. Even if you justify it rationally, deep inside of yourself, you've just chipped away at your self-esteem. You've chipped away at your knowledge and confidence in the fact that you are competent. And when you do that, the more you chip that away, the more you need other people to support you, the more you need handrails given to you by society, the more you need, you're completely cut off all of your own self-reliance and your own self, you cut yourself off from the journey of self-discovery, period, because you're trying to edit the world. You're trying to edit life. And that's what I feel is happening even politically right now, when we hear a lot of the stuff going on in university campuses and in the whole social milieu and all this stuff, is like, we're trying to edit reality and make it something it's not. And we're going to see disastrous consequences as a result of that. And I'm speaking from my own experience. And I've seen this also in a smaller arena as a martial arts instructor. I've seen many people come in that had great potential to become very, very good martial artists. And I've seen them quit when they hit the first roadblock. And I was always like, wow, like, that student had tremendous potential. I don't know why they just stopped coming. And I would try to do follow-up calls. I would try to motivate them. And they just could never get around the fact that 90% of their journey in martial arts is going to be failure. And I feel like the martial art concept is one of the last real things that we have. There are many, but for me, I'm biased towards martial arts, so I'm going to use it as an example, that it is one of the things that is there to prove to you. There's no more theory. There's theoretical parts of it, but what I'm saying is that it's a place that you can go where you're not just going to talk about ideas all the time and then it's just up in your head. You get to actually bring it into the physical world and prove it to yourself. You know what I'm saying? So are you able to prove to yourself that you are worthy of success, that you are worthy of happiness, that happiness is an integral part of your existence here, that it is part of what it is to be human? It's not something to run away from and feel guilty about. Like, if, isn't that funny? When you're surrounded by a lot of unhappy people, which I'm sure many of you are, people who have not fulfilled their destiny, people that are lost in life, people that are they're suffering from depression because they never had a chance, they never had an outlet. Maybe they were let down by their parents or the schools, or I don't know. There's many reasons why people go that way. And by the way, I never feel like that's irreversible. I've worked with many people that have come from some of the darkest experiences and horrific tragedies in their life, and I've seen them become fully actualized, fully empowered warriors. So it's not impossible, and it's never too late for you. It's never too late. I've worked with young people, old people. I've seen it happen across the board. But it always makes me feel sad when I see people give up too early. Or even in the world, like I'm an entrepreneur. This is how I do what I do. This is why I'm able to just jump on Facebook Live midday. It's probably things I should be doing, but I'd rather talk to you guys right now. Is that I work for myself. My wife and I, we have built our own business model that integrates a few different income streams. There are things that we love, that we're passionate about, and that we believe in. And yes, we earn an income from it, and we earn a good income from it. And I never, ever feel guilty about that. Not for one second. Because I know that what I'm doing is fulfilling my own personal journey, and it is also facilitating helping other people reach their journey. I'm not in a position where I'm hoarding resources. I'm in a position where I'm actually part of my part of my entrepreneurial venture is to teach other people how to become entrepreneurs and how to go down that track. But you get all the business skills you want. You could take all the courses and webinars you want. But if you do not address your own state of mind and your own limiting belief systems and the way you view success and the way you view yourself, if you do not address those things, you will not be successful. You will not. So this is why it's fundamental, whether you're pursuing a business, whether you're trying to get a promotion in your job, whether you're in a relationship that you would like to see succeed, whether you are training something like martial arts or anything that you're passionate about that you want to be good at. You have to erase the guilt that is sort of put on you by other people who live in a loser mentality that you're worth that and that you deserve that. I believe that you get what you earn. I'm not into free handouts. There's no free lunches. And no matter how much we try to believe that, it's never going to be the case. Even if you had the perfect political social system, you would still have to strive. You would still have to struggle in order to find success. And I'm actually saying that it's linked. If you go back and look at that Greek concept of happiness, and there have been many others. I'm just picking the Greeks because they had a really good way of defining it. You will see that the struggle is linked to that. So for me, when I go and train, I am to this day constantly up against myself. I'm up against my laziness. I'm up against my self-doubt. Even to this day, guys, even to this day, I've been training martial arts since I'm 9 years old, and there are still areas that I'm not fully confident in, and I have to work on them. But I don't take it the same way I used to. I used to take it like, oh my God, I failed in front of everybody. I can't do that. I've lost, or I'm working with somebody that's new and they were able to get the best of me. Oh my God, my world is just caving in and I'm not good at martial arts anymore. And you start beating yourself up about stupid things and you realize, no, this is a journey. This is a long-term journey of personal development. And you can't be successful without that. Like if you walked into a martial arts school and on your first day you were just kicking everybody's ass, no problem, you would have no incentive really to return. You'd be like, all right, I guess I'm already good. I don't really need, these guys have nothing to teach me. There's no adversity. It all comes easy. I don't have to really work and train and do all those push-ups. There'd be no benefit to you. But if you go in on the other hand and you realize there is a whole universe of knowledge in front of you right now, practical knowledge, not just airy-fairy stuff, real everyday stuff that works, that you have to learn, and you're going to have to deprogram a lot of mistakes and movements and ways of thinking that you already have in order to be successful at that thing. A lot of people find it's kind of addictive. It's a good addiction in a way. You're like, wow, like if you come at it with that attitude that I want to expose myself to this, I'm not going to have any expectations of myself other than I'm going to show up. I'm going to overcome my own personal adversity, deal with my laziness, deal with my fear of failure, deal with my whatever inner stuff that's going on, and go in and just show up and do the work and give it my best. How can you not feel like a winner doing that, even if you're not successful every day in the mat, you know? And I see these guys come in. I've taught in martial art facilities for 15 years. I've owned my own dojo. I own my own dojo in Toronto for 8 years. I've been here in BC for just over 2 years. And I've seen a lot of people come and go. I've worked in a lot of different academies under a lot of different instructors. So I've been around the block with that. And you see these guys come in sometimes who are just like, yeah, I'm not ranked, but like I submit blue belts and purple belts all the time, or you know, I knocked out this guy in a street fight, or you know, I just want to come in and roll. I just want to come in and spar. I just need a challenge. And then you're like, okay, well, here's one of my white belts. Have at it. And let's work on some drills and then we can do some rolling. And then that white belt gets the better of that guy and you never see him again. And you're like, well, I thought you said you wanted a challenge. Just because you didn't come in here and roll over all my students, because that would never happen because my students are badass. They're trained assassins, man. You're now going to quit? Like, don't you want to be like that? Wouldn't you take wouldn't you take that as, oh my God, this is the place to train. These guys know what they're doing. I have a lot to learn. This is amazing. But the problem is the ego doesn't let you do that. So that's that person's adversity. And I hope one day all of those people that have come in with that attitude, eventually, I hope one day they open up their minds and they actually go on the journey because they need it more than anybody else. So to find happiness in your life, guys, you've got to take some alone time to figure this out. You can't always do this while having people around you. For me personally, maybe it's just my personality, but I like to go for a walk. I like to go for a drive. I like to listen to some music by myself and just think about these things. Give yourself some time to think. I feel like we live a life that is so fast-paced these days and constantly you're always either you're with people physically or you're with people online constantly. And it's to the point where you don't even have space to think for yourself. So then your thoughts are no longer just yours. They've started to become other people's thoughts. And if you're surrounded by a lot of people that are talking down in a sense that like they maybe don't have a lot of self-esteem, they don't value going out and trying to actualize their potential or whatever. So they're going to talk you out of it. They're going to talk you out of doing all these things. Why do you want to do that? Why do you want to go to the gym? Why do you want to start eating healthy now? Why do you want to think about deep thoughts? Why are you interested in studying these kinds of subjects? Let's just go drink some beers and not think about anything and just Netflix and chill. And there's fun. There's a time for that. But in order to figure out what makes you happy, is that what makes you happy? Is not being productive actually making you happy? Like as cool as it sounds, like, hey, I don't ever have to work again. Everything's just going to come to me for free. Is that really going to make you feel happy in life? Or would you feel a lot more happy if you knew that any success you gained materially, physically, psychologically, spiritually, emotionally, or whatever, you strove for it. You went through challenges. You overcame those challenges. You bettered yourself in the process. And then you gained success. Wow, what a feeling that is. And it's a feeling that can only be described properly once you've been there. And maybe some of you, I hope, have been there. I'm sure you've been there at least in one respect or another. But I'm here to encourage you to continue on that road, to go and seek out adversity. Not stupidly, not like you're out looking for a fight. But it's kind of funny. There was the movie Fight Club, which I've always loved. There's a scene in there. You could look at it esoterically where Brad Pitt tells all the guys in Fight Club, he's like, listen, here's your homework. You're going to go start a fight and you're going to lose. Go ahead. And everybody's like, what? Why would I want to go start a fight and then lose it on purpose? But that was the homework assignment. Now in the movie, obviously it's ridiculous because they're literally walking up to people in the street trying to piss them off to the point where they'll start a fight. And I'm not advocating that. Look at it esoterically. Look at it like your mission is to seek some challenges that you feel like you can deal with in the beginning and then get to a point where you're going to seek out failing at that thing as many ways as you possibly can so that you can get a better understanding of it. And you can learn that it's not about winning and losing. It's about pursuing. It's about the journey. It's not about the destination. It's about the journey. And in order to refine yourself, get all of the mistakes and all the doubts and all the fears and all the worries and all the adversity, get it out of the way and get used to it and get comfortable being uncomfortable. If you can become comfortable being uncomfortable, you've just discovered one of the secrets of life, in my opinion. Because we constantly run away from being uncomfortable, and biologically and genetically, obviously we can understand that in terms of survival. Our agricultural ancestors were in a lot of discomfort, you know, live, or even just think back to when we didn't have buildings and structures, really, we were living out in nature. Oh my God, like that is quite the challenge, is it not? And then everything we have now is a result of all of those previous generations going through it to the point where we figured out a better way of surviving. And obviously we don't have it all figured out and there's tons of challenges, but it's better than, you know, how it was 1,000 years ago or even 100 years ago. Maybe philosophically speaking, we've deviated and it's worse now. There's an argument for that. But when it just comes to basic survival, it was all the challenges that we faced that brought us to here. So take that as a lesson in your personal life and say, hey, I'm going to find adversity so much that I'm no longer going to be afraid of it. I mean, because that's what this is really all about, isn't it? It's like we're here to face fear. We're here to overcome our fear. And, I got a really cool comment. Stoikos Studio. They say Aristotle said it means, they're talking about eudaimonia, it means activity in accordance with virtue. Yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds good. Activity in accordance with virtue. So the virtues, if you want to have, there's a good show I did covering the virtues of Bushido, and I also spoke about Asatru and some other systems and ideas of virtue in regards to the warrior traditions that I feel affect, you know, they apply to all of our lives today. You need a system of moral ethic. So when you're going to go out and pursue greatness or pursue a goal that you have, the virtue and morality is so necessary, because what's to say that if you're some kind of psychopath that doesn't care about anybody else, that, well, aren't they out there pursuing their interests? Aren't they out there pursuing what they want in life, which is to dominate other human beings in a malicious way? Clearly, that's not what I'm advocating. But yeah, they're doing the same thing, are they not? But they're doing it without a system of morals and virtues. They're doing it without recognition that you do need your fellow human beings, and there's a value to other human beings. And I feel like we've covered this many times on the Unslaved podcast, that those type of psychopathic narcissists or sociopathic narcissists, they are the most selfless people. Selfless in the sense that they don't have a fully formed identity. Even psychologists have shown this, or their identity has become perverted. Like, watch that movie American Psycho. It kind of goes into that a little bit. So they've basically, this is the term that Michael likes to use, which is self-murdered. They're self-murdered people. They haven't developed themselves. They haven't developed any virtue towards themselves. They haven't developed self-love and self-appreciation. So therefore, they do not have the ability, they don't have a foundation by which they can see other human beings. So that's why it's all about disposable. Oh, they're disposable. They're in my way. These are people that are in my way that I have to trample over to get what I want. That is a very malignant form of this. That is somebody that's operating on just, hey, I want to go and find happiness. Maybe that's what makes that person happy, but I'm going to mow everybody down in the way in order to get that happiness. That is somebody that is absent morals and virtue and needs that, obviously. So when you're on this path, simultaneously to you going on this personal discovery journey and learning about yourself and figuring out what you want in life and taking that alone time to really think things through and figure out, you know, what do I want to do with my life? I've got a finite amount of time to live here. What kind of life do I want to live? At the same time, you also have to contemplate, well, what are my ethics? What's the system that I'm going to hold myself to, so that I can do this in the right way, that I can, what is right? What is the right and wrong? And we live in a time now where everything's up for debate, and it's moral. What's the term? It's moral relativism. It's, oh, morality's relative. Well, no, I don't believe that. I believe you need to operate on a system that it's, you know, the morals that I hold myself to are universally applied. Like, otherwise, I will jeopardize my own progress, and I will jeopardize the progress of other people in the meantime. I'm violating other people's freedom by trying to pursue my own freedom. That doesn't make any sense. So in that sense, that kind of brings me to one of the conversations I had recently with Michael on the Unslaved podcast, where we were talking about, you know, in a political context, individualism versus collectivism. And this is a huge discussion right now, guys. If you go and watch any of the big YouTube channels out there or listen to what's going on in the circles of debate, the discussion of how we form a society to protect, are we forming a society to protect the rights of the individual as was founded originally through, or when the United States was originally founded, and sort of the Western concept of, you know, let's build laws that protect individual rights, individual property rights, individual freedom, And then they figured that will help the collective by having strong individual units that, you know, you have the ability to dissent if you want to, you have the ability to disagree. Or are we going to build a society that is extremely collectivistic in nature, where now you are a subject to the group? You're not just owned and controlled by the government. You are owned and controlled by all of the people around you. And if you tend to disagree with a lot of the people around you, and you don't have a system in place that's going to protect your right to disagree and to defend your position, then you're in a tyranny. And I guess on the other extreme, if we have an extreme individualism to the point where everybody's just selfish and not in any way trying to work with their family and their community, and everybody's a bunch of lone gunmen or they're loners and they're not able to work with other people, well, then you're not going to get anything done. You can't build a bridge with just people, they say there's like too many chiefs, too many bosses. You can't do that. You need to have an organized structure. People need to work together. There's a way to do that, right? So even in my martial arts studio, I'm someone that really advocates, from whether I'm teaching children all the way up to adults, that my students pursue an individual path in martial arts. But at the same time, I have created a collective there of people that are like-minded that are pursuing the same goal. So the collective goal and agenda of that group is we all want to become better at martial arts. So we're going to come together with other people that are A, interested in martial arts and see it as valuable, see it as fun or whatever. And B, we all want to be good at it. We're not just going to come here and be horrible at it forever. We want to get better at it. So that means we're all going to slightly curtail our individual rights a little bit, not our rights, but like our freedom, to the extent that we're not going to just do whatever we want to everybody with no restriction. If we're coming together, there's sort of this little social contract in that dojo that says, hey, when I come in, when we're sparring, I'm not going to break your arm. I'm not going to knock you out. I'm not going to punch you in the throat. I'm not going to kick you in the groin, because I respect you and I respect the fact that you're on the same journey as I am, and we should work together instead of just demolishing each other every time we practice in order to achieve our goal of success. So there's an extreme form of individualism and there's an extreme form of collectivism. And like many truths, it's in the middle where you balance out those two things. And then when you get into the political debates, I mean, there's so many arguments and discussions to be had about how to get that perfect for society. I don't think it's ever going to be perfect. So let's not hold our breath and wait for the perfect political system to save the world. How about you save your own world first? Like, so it's just about priorities, right? Number one, put your own oxygen mask on. Prepare yourself for the world. Build your self-confidence, build yourself, turn yourself into something, be productive, be proactive, try to become more competent at the things that you're doing. By doing that, you will inspire other people around you to do the same. And that's where that empathy comes in, that you recognize that all the people around you are on a similar journey, ultimately, whether they're lost on their journey or whether they're always up to the task or not, that's really besides the point. Regardless of all of that, you're still going to stay true to your vision about what you want in life. And you're going to have that moral compass in place so that you don't violate other people in the process. You don't violate their freedom. So I think we get stuck so many times on the little details of things and the way we argue about these things. And we forget the bigger picture of what we're all trying to get to in many times. I just know I've done it. I've been guilty of it too. But how do we all get along so that we can achieve what we want? Unfortunately, you're going to meet a lot of people that are adversarial to you. They're not really on your team and they're not there to support you. And many times they might even be trying to compromise you. That's just a fact of living as a human being on planet Earth. So you have to do your best to surround yourself with people that are like-minded to you and that see the same goals as you and that want to support you on those goals. So for me, when I'm looking at a dojo or a place that I want to go and do whatever activity, I don't need everybody to be 100% like me. I don't want that. I want diversity in that sense. But we should at least share the same values. And if you see the best dojos out there, the places that, you know, they do very well as a student base. They're not always the biggest places. They do well at what they're doing. They're very, very successful at what they do. They are very good teams. They work very well together. They have a good rapport with each other. They get each other's back, literally and figuratively. They work hard and they're all on the same path. It's like a wolf pack. They're all on the same journey. But they're, you know, the best places are also there. They respect your individual journey. So what I mean when I say that I encourage that in my school is like you come in as a student, I'm teaching you Japanese jiu-jitsu, kickboxing, karate, you know, the striking disciplines, a little bit of kabuto, weapon training. Like I'm giving you a rather eclectic look at martial arts, but it is through the lens of the martial arts that I studied and that I've mastered myself in. So I teach you that. Oh, my live video ended on Instagram. Sorry, guys. I guess that's capped for Instagram. So I'll just share that. So anyways, but I'm also there to encourage you to go and seek knowledge from other people. Like I'm not the be all and end all. I'm not trying to be some guru or whatever. I know what I know. I'm competent at what I do. I offer a service. You can learn from me. You can leave anytime. I don't hold anybody to contracts. I just, you know, you come in, you train. If you like it, you pay me. If you don't like it, see you later. Or, but what's cool is that I keep my student retention very high because I do encourage people. Yeah. Hey, there's a seminar with that guy in town. Go train with him. Oh, there's a place up the street that has more of a focus on capoeira or something that I'm not teaching. Go do it. Like go as an individual, I respect that. And I want you to go on your own journey. So that's how I operate. Some guys don't like that. They want everything on one roof. They don't want you leaving. They don't want you. And I kind of have an idea as to why they do that, but I don't agree with that philosophy. I'm a lot more open when it comes to it. And I feel like training eclectically in martial arts or in whatever discipline you're doing is really, really valuable. So why would I set myself up as like the be all and end all of your martial art journey? That's ridiculous. I hope I can offer you some value and I hope I have an impact on your life and I hope I can teach you what I know. But I'm not the only teacher in the world. There are many, many other people to learn from. And in the internet age, you can go online right now and you can watch thousands of other martial arts masters out there that are going to teach you different variations on the things that you know. So the way I structure my curriculum is I'm trying to give you a good foundation so that you understand all the fundamental positions and the ways of moving and, you know, whether it's ground fighting or wrestling or judo or stand up or weapon training or self-defense or, you know, these are all the areas of martial arts. I show you the style, but I'm teaching you principles. So I'm teaching you conceptual martial arts so that you as a student can grow faster. It's not just a paint by numbers thing. To a certain extent, I have a technical curriculum that I follow, but I also deviate from that a lot. And I go outside the box and I try to say, hey, let's look at commonality in movement, whether you're standing up or on the ground or whatever, so that you can understand the human body. You can understand how to deal with, you know, someone's putting direct pressure onto you, how to absorb that and redirect it. These are principles that if you study all the different martial arts, you will see everybody implements these principles just in different ways, which is why it's great to have that kind of diversity. So that if you walk into any dojo, I don't care where it is, you'll be competent. You'll understand. And even though, yeah, okay, that's a different style of doing it or different way of moving, but I get the concept of it. I find that to be extremely valuable. And I would suggest the same thing when it comes to your study of any subject, your own philosophy, politics, religion, science, whatever. Don't just look in one place. Realize that there's a lot of different variations because human beings are diverse and we have variations of human beings. And we have an infinite imagination and a way of, there are many different genius level people out there that have conceptualized their way of thinking in different ways. And that all of that is a gift. All of that is valuable. But it's up to you to go and look at that archive of knowledge and then not just become some disciple of somebody, but to ultimately become your own unique expression. This was something Bruce Lee was a big advocate for, was he even got to a point where he said, I don't believe in styles anymore. I don't believe in styles. I believe in the human body. I believe in movement. I believe in finding the best way to express yourself. And yes, effective. It has to be effective. There is a science to it. There's a scientific way. There's a proper way to kick. There's a proper way to punch. There's a proper way to do an armbar, and there's an improper way. But once you understand the fundamentals, those are like all the different colors of paint on your paint palette. And now you, once you've sort of mastered all of those basics, are to go out and paint a masterpiece, not to just follow and rinse and repeat all the time. And you, I will say this too. You absolutely need coaches and senseis and teachers in your life. You need that. You can only learn by yourself for so long. You will need to go to a legit training facility and train with high-level people and learn from great teachers, because they're there to show you the door. They're there to show you, hey, this is what I've learned. Here's how I've mastered it. Here's the technique. And then you're going to blend it with your own unique rhythm and your own unique way of thinking. So with that being said, I'm going to go through a couple comments here. Oh, my brother took off. See you later, bro. Brandon Young says, I think it was Napoleon Hill that said most people are afraid of wealth. Yeah, probably. Stevie says, priceless advice, brilliant insights. Oh, thanks, Stevie. Glad I could offer something for you today. Let me see. Robert says, Tuesdays, the martial energy, as it is the day of war. No wonder why you are doing your talk today. Oh, Tuesday, the martial energy as it is, the day of war. No wonder why you're doing your talk today. I would bet most in the martial arts are born on Tuesdays or in Aries or Scorpio. Well, I am Aries. At least the majority of martial arts would fall into those categories, or ones that have a lot of Mars in their chart. Well, that makes sense, whatever. I mean, I'm the kind of person that I don't think you're a victim to your chart. But I do respect the ancient astrological, the way they looked at astrology. And there's some very interesting things where there seems to be personality traits based on the time that you're born, the time on the planet, the cycle of the planet that you're born, the stars in your chart and all that stuff. I mean, ultimately, I think it's discussing your consciousness and all that, but really interesting idea. So today's Tuesday, and apparently there's a lot of martial energy in the air, which is why I'm doing my show. Hey, you never know, Robert. You could be right, man. Thanks for that comment. Edson says, David, people here don't take their shoes off before walking into the house. This constant mode of go, 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 and remaining unconscious. Yeah, I hear what you're saying there. Like, we're rushing about so much that we're not just muddying up the house. I think we're muddying up our society, and we're muddying up our life more than we otherwise would if we could just learn how to take some time. Like, you ever hear your parents when you were a kid say, hey, take your time, slow down, because otherwise what's going to happen? You're going to trip, you're going to fall, you're going to bump into people, you're going to knock stuff over, you're going to knock the lampshade off and all that kind of stuff. So take your time, be aware. One of the first things I do with kids in my martial art class is I teach them games. Kids love playing games. If I say, hey, I'm going to play a game, they're already ears perked up. If I'm like, okay, we're going to train this really complex thing, they're already tuned out. So we say, let's play games. And most of the games in the beginning as a white belt on a junior level are to enhance your spatial awareness, to be aware of your surroundings. I'm constantly harping on that in my class. Be aware of your spatial surroundings. So I actually put the kids in scenarios where they're racing and they're running in different directions and they're rolling in the same sequences. I posted a video the other day of us practicing some back rolls and forward rolls, and they're all trying to roll in a circle and not hit each other. And maybe some of the parents might be like, oh my God, they're going to get injured. Little Bobby is going to get his head kicked by some other kid. And you're like, well, yeah. I want that to happen in a way. I want this to, because that's part of the training. You got to get banged up a little bit. That's the adversity I'm talking about. Don't get irrational about it, but you need that. You need spatial awareness training. Guys, just go to Walmart for 5 minutes. Go to the mall for 5 minutes. Go to a hockey game and just realize how many people are just not looking where they're going, especially today. Everybody's on their phone, walking on their phone. Everybody's looking everywhere else except where you're at. And how many times I find myself walking, I'm shopping. I was doing some Christmas shopping this year, and I'm walking in the mall. And I actually started doing a test. you know, I'm looking around at the beautiful Christmas trees in the mall and looking at the things I wanted. I'm looking at some gift ideas and all that stuff. But I'm, because of I'm a martial artist, my spatial awareness and my spidey sense is always there. So I'm always aware of where other people are. And I'm dodging people constantly, and actually turns it into like a training exercise. Like, whoa, let's see if I can't get hit here while I'm shopping, get mowed over by a crowd of people. And I was impressed by the fact that people just have this glazed, desperate look on their face. Like, I gotta go. I'm in a rush. It's stressed. And I don't care if you're in my way. I don't even know that you're there. I'm just going that way. And I'm always just impressed by this. And that's why I feel martial arts in that sense is a very valuable benefit. And so with the kids, they're always running around and playing tag before class. And so I always have to say, okay, guys, calm down. Let's sit down. Let's bow in and let's start training. But then I get them back to doing a game of running or tag or freeze tag or whatever, because I want them to learn how to be aware while they're playing. So we're not saying don't play, don't run, don't do these things, don't go play in the mud. We're saying go do those things, but do it with awareness. So thanks for your comment, Edson. You got me off on some tangent there. Appreciate it. Robert says, growth happens when we leave our comfort zone. Amen. It absolutely does. That's really the only time you can grow. I mean, otherwise you're going to stay stagnant. Brandon says, The Wisdom of Uncertainty by Alan Watts. Oh, yeah, I believe I've seen this. This is a really good one for sure. Stevie says, fail forward and fail fast until you make the breakthrough. That's right, man. That's right. Let's see. Edson has another comment here. Yet that same discomfort made us take the challenge. Craft spears, farm, building, carts, etc. And the psychopath will use these tools to dominate and control, being unvirtuous, no sense of self, introspection, and no self-respect. That's right, man. You hit it on the head. Brandon said, more relativism and postmodernism. Aren't those the two same things, pretty much? I think so. Let me see if I can get some other comments. Michael Duddles, on a most fundamental level, though, motivation can be very hard to come by in the philosophical existential vacuum, usually encountered by the hyper-aware and comprehending. You sometimes have to force a vision of meaning. Interesting. On the most fundamental level, motivation can be very hard to come by in the philosophical vacuum. I guess it depends on what philosophical vacuum you're in and how you view philosophy and how you view things. But when you're talking about like existentialism, and I guess there are many philosophies that actually they sort of poo-poo the idea of any kind of they don't like the idea of motivated people. They don't like the idea of go-getters and ambition. Ambition is like an evil thing in a lot of philosophies. So unchecked ambition, immoral people being ambitious. I mean, look at all the tyrants of history, and even tyrants I'm sure you know in your own personal life, and you'll know what I mean by that. But that again goes back to the idea of having a good balance of philosophical thinking, a true understanding of morality that is actually sane and rational. And how that all balances out with when, like the way that you're approaching your activities and the way you're pursuing your ambitions in the world. To actually discount ambition as a human quality is, I think, a disaster. You don't want a bunch of unmotivated people walking around. I think that's one of the other reasons we see a lot of young people suffering from depression, and even getting to the point where we're seeing teen suicide on a massive rise, is because they're not stimulated. They're not being grown properly. They're not developing properly. They don't have any motivation. You don't have a motivation to live. There's not a connection to who they are. They're confused, and they're not getting answers to their questions. So we can obviously see that it can be disastrous to fall out of balance with that. So yeah, interesting comment, Michael. Thank you for that. Kimberly says, thank you for this. Gotta run. Please do more live. Okay. Well, I will take that under advisement, Kimberly. Sounds good. Edson says again, I used to work in bars. Spatial awareness is a science and an art. It became a dance. Oh, I'm sure, man. I did a little bit of bar stuff back in the day. I've definitely been to my fair share of bars, And that's an interesting dynamic, because not only are you trying to just kind of get through the bar and get to your seat and hang out with your people, but there's a lot of drunk ass people walking around. And if they take a look that you had the wrong way, or the way you brushed them the wrong way, or whatever, there's a lot of people in there that go there because once they start drinking, they're looking for a fight. So it's a very, very interesting environment. So yeah, I guess you could call that a dance. Yeah. Well, that's it, guys. I think that's all I'm really going to say for today. I want to thank you all for tuning in. I'm going to do some more of these live. I'm going to test out a few other ways that I can do this a little bit more efficiently. But this is great. I like sometimes just being able to get my thoughts out, and I appreciate you just sitting here listening to me ramble on. But I really do like the interactivity. I like the feeling of just like sitting around at a bar or sitting around at a coffee shop with just some people and just having some conversation. So I want to do a lot more of that on my Truth Warrior show. So I'll try to get better at the live thing, and we've got a lot more content coming your way. And I also wanted to finish off saying a few things about Unslaved. We have some really, really cool guests coming up this year that we're working on. Some really cool features that are going to be added to our memberships, to the membership feature that I'm really excited about, where Michael is essentially going to be doing a weekly premium presentation style show just for premium members, where he's basically, because when I speak to him, he's always in the research. He's always in the books. Like even when I try to talk to him about like business stuff or marketing stuff or stuff about the podcast, technical stuff, it's not long before he and I are already talking about we're talking about these kind of subjects. He's just that passionate about the subjects that he's interested in. So basically what we're going to be offering is for people that are members of Unslaved, you're going to be able to go along with Michael as he's researching. So he's always reading books and always writing stuff down. And he even all the content that he's done, he's telling me he's only put out like a fraction of the stuff that he has. So he's been waiting for a forum like this where he can really put it out in a more efficient way to the people that are interested in it. And so not only are we going to have the podcast regularly, we're going to be recording other episodes. Like he did a broadcast a while back on Red Ice Creations called The Brotherhood of Death. And this was one of my favorite presentations. If you haven't heard it, go check it out. He gets into the Masons and the secret societies. It's all really cool and very relevant. And he wants to redo that. So he'll be doing something like that in a bunch of segments. He's also got different philosophers that he's been reading that he wants to like give his take on their work and like give it out in little chunks. So you'll basically be following him on his research journey, as well as we have the guests and we have the regular shows and other content and other cool features coming your way. We're also trying to improve our website, improve the plugins that we're using to make things smoother, improve our help desk so we can help people with any issues they're having technically. And also find some ways where we can do more live stuff as well with Unslaved, and to have more interactivity, more conversation, because we don't want it to just be a one-way street where it's like we're just up here preaching. Like we want it to be a conversation. So we've got some cool, cool stuff coming your way for the Unslaved podcast, and I'm still working on Truth Warrior as well. So thank you guys for tuning in, hearing my thoughts. I hope it added some value. If you agree or disagree, doesn't matter. Leave your comments. And we'll catch up again on another live stream very soon. So have a great day. Go pursue your passion and your vision. Be ethical about it. And we'll chat again soon, guys. Have a good one.